your next great vacation might be something you've never even considered. A private yacht in a beautiful location just for you and your closest friends and family. Explore the beaches of the Virgin Islands, the ancient shores of Greece, or the tropical paradise of Tahiti. This is not a cruise. This is a yacht charter vacation with The Moorings. And it's easier than you think. With hundreds of award-winning yachts to choose from, located in over 20 beautiful sailing destinations, the world is in your hands. Whether you're an experienced boater or looking for a more genuine once-in-a-lifetime vacation, The Moorings can make your dream a reality. Call us today and start your journey to your next great escape. Your private yacht awaits at moorings.com.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Hello and welcome back to the Jet Press Podcast. My name is Justin Free, and I am joined, as always, by my good friend, Mike Luciano. Mike, we are back. It has been, 2 weeks, I think, since we've done this. I went to Maine. I got COVID. You went to Alaska. A lot has happened. But how you doing, buddy? What's going on?
I went to Alaska. I did not get COVID, although I'm pretty sure. I mean, we were on a boat with 2,000 people because it was a cruise. I guarantee you there was something floating around at some point. But I am back. I am refreshed. I got to see nature. I got to go on a very nice cruise. We got to go all over Sitka, Ketchikan, Anchorage. We kind of did everything, but I'm happy to be back. And we came back, I think, at the perfect time because it's training camp and there's actual news to discuss.
Yes, sir.
Because there have been months and months of not much happening, but we are officially back and we're excited because it's the Jets, they do not give us a moment of breathing room when there is actually stuff going on. We got a pretty full show for you. But before all that, you can always find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts, we are there. And we're on YouTube at the Jet Press, so you can subscribe there. You can give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Both of those things really help and give the stream a like. Like, they all help boost us up those Google algorithms and those Apple algorithms as we try to game the system and get higher on the charts. So that's how you can support the show if you want to do that. You can also support by just tuning in and listening to us talk about the Jets, which we are going to do. So let's just jump right in. We are going to start, as always, because he is the man of the hour, with Aaron Rodgers. And I don't want to go sound like somebody saying, oh, the media is doing this and the media is going quick, because I hate when guys do that. But Aaron Rodgers has got to – I don't know if it's the Jets or him or the combination of both or whatever, or just people running with jokes online. But, like, anything that happens now is just, how could this possibly – what the hell is going on? Like, he could give half of his salary to orphans. And they'd be like, how dare he? Like, we're at that point now. Like, as it comes out recently, Robert Saleh basically says Aaron Rodgers is not going to play in the preseason. This seems pretty standard to me. He is A, really good, so you don't want to risk him getting hurt. B, 40 years old. And C, coming off an injury. Why play him in games that don't matter? Honestly, even if he were healthy last year and he won MVP and he broke the playoff curse and all that, even if he did that, I wouldn't want him playing in the preseason right now. There's really no benefit. Now, I saw some people getting jokes of, well, he's not healthy to play now, but he was healthy enough to come back. Completely different, completely different things. This is not injury related. He's been practicing. He's been full go in camp. He looks like the Aaron Rodgers of old from what we've seen at camp. I mean, he just had, what, 6 touchdown passes today? I mean, that looks like Aaron Rodgers from Green Bay. The firestorm that came out as a result of this was, it was baffling, quite frankly. I couldn't make heads or tails of it. Now, so, because you're Jet Press listeners and you actually got heads on your shoulders and you have an IQ somewhere in probably the triple digits, you're not just throwing your brain in a microwave and then spouting off takes online like it seems like so many of these people are nowadays. You guys understand that this is just totally precautionary and nothing really alarming is happening right now. Now, if he misses time in the regular season because something's bothering him, time to get worried. This is not time to get worried yet.
I think most people understand that, Mike. I think it's the, I don't want to use the term like vocal minority or whatever, but it's most people understand that this is not a big deal. Robert Saleh is using the exact same verbiage that he used last year when he was talking about Aaron Rodgers, because remember, Rodgers did not play in the first 2 preseason games last year either. He played in the 3rd game. I think 2 drives was all he played against the Giants. It is the same thing that Robert Saleh said this year. He didn't mention the Achilles thing. He didn't mention anything about Rodgers not playing at all in the preseason. He said they won't play him in the first 2 games and then they'll see how it goes for the 3rd game. That is exactly, basically word for word, what Robert Saleh said last year about Aaron Rodgers. And here we are again. It's the same situation because you have a 40-year-old quarterback. You don't really need to throw him out there. And a lot of teams don't necessarily play their starters, let alone their starting quarterback, especially in all 3 games. I don't think a lot of teams do that at all.
I mean, that's been the trend lately where even more guys are playing their starters even less.
Correct. And that's perfectly fine. Like, that is perfectly fine with me. I think there's a chance Rodgers plays a drive in that last preseason game. And when that happens, won't it be so silly that so many people were having the takes that they have right now? But that's just how this is. We've talked about this before. Like, I understand why Aaron Rodgers, and I understand why the New York Jets are covered differently than the rest of the NFL. The Jets have been the laughingstock of the league for a long time. They've been a dysfunctional organization, poorly run, and also just, like, it's not even just being poorly run because, like, the Commanders are poorly run, and they have been poorly run for so long. But the Jets are poorly run in a way that's funny. Like, I feel like there have been so many slapstick elements to this, just like in this, even just over the last like 12, 13 years in this playoff drought that you could point to where it's like, that's ridiculous. Like, this wouldn't happen to any other team. So I understand why the perception is the way it is about the Jets. And I understand why Aaron Rodgers is covered differently. Part of it, he brings upon himself. I think that's understood at this point. But that doesn't mean we can't call out misinformation when we see it, because anybody trying to insinuate that this has anything to do with the Achilles injury is wrong. Like, that's it. It's factually inaccurate. He was cleared by doctors for return late December, I believe, of last year. Obviously, he did not return. And if he did return then during the season, it was, I think, pretty well covered that it would not have been, he would not have been 100%, and he would have been taking a significant risk, which is why as soon as the Jets were eliminated from playoff contention, they were like, hey, this is not worth it. It's not worth the rushing back. But he's been cleared. He's been cleared since then. He's practiced fully in every single facet of the offseason. Going back to OTAs in the spring, I guess not minicamp because he wasn't there, but he's practiced fully in training camp. There are plenty of other guys dealing with injuries who could be talked about instead. Like, you know, a guy like Morgan Moses is still recovering from injury. That's someone you could point to where it's like, oh, if they don't play in the preseason, might have something to do with the injury. Aaron Rodgers is not. And I think most people realize that. Unfortunately, we had that Adam Schefter tweet, which was very misleading and mentioned the Achilles, mentioned that he was still recovering from the Achilles, which, it depends how you define still recovering. I would define it as he's recovered, or that's what I would say. I would say he is recovered from the Achilles injury. It's a weird situation. Mike Williams, he's still recovering from his ACL injury because he's not back. He's still legitimately injured, or he's still rehabbing. Aaron Rodgers is not rehabbing. He is fully back. If he's not playing in the preseason, which we still don't know if he's not playing at all, we don't know if he's not playing that final game. If he doesn't play, it's not because of the Achilles injury. Anyway, hold on. Real quick, shout out Connor in chat. I meant to say this earlier. Jet Press Pod, welcome Connor does great stuff. Check out what he does as well.
Some cool synergy there. But yes, sir. The weird thing about this is because we don't want to just be like, you know, North Korean state-run propaganda here for the Rodgers machine, because the weird thing about, like, Rodgers does a lot of things worthy of criticism. Like, yes. I think he can be a little prickly. I don't like, it's one thing, like, political views, not necessarily his political views, but he'll say like weird things at weird times.
Yeah.
Politically, socially, on the show, wherever.
He's a controversial person. Like, I
think, but like, just to like, for no reason.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys, like, just out of nowhere, like, do you like Pepsi or Coke? Well, I like Pepsi because Coke and blah, 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 blah. Like, he likes arguing in that way.
Yeah.
And it's weird. And I also don't love how the amount of control he has over everything.
Sure.
Coaching, just how the team functions day to day. Like, there are things to criticize Aaron Rodgers about, but it feels weird doing that because then you get lumped in with the people who are saying that he's, you know, faking how healthy he is. And this is all like, you don't want to join that cacophony over there, but right. You also want to cover him fairly. Like, it's a very weird, I don't know if Packers fans really went through this. I guess maybe it was different because he just built up so much equity with them, like that he was kind of covered differently. And again, it's Green Bay versus New York, but it's a very unusual time in New York sports media. And the way that everything he does is being discussed by people outside the media, it's certainly not helping things. It's only adding to the weirdness.
Your next great vacation might be something you've never even considered. A private yacht in a beautiful location just for you and your closest friends and family. Explore the beaches of the Virgin Islands, the ancient shores of Greece, or the tropical paradise of Tahiti. This is not a cruise. This is a yacht charter vacation with the moorings. And it's easier than you think. With hundreds of award-winning yachts to choose from, located in over 20 beautiful sailing destinations, the world is in your hands. Whether you're an experienced boater or looking for a more genuine once-in-a-lifetime vacation, the moorings can make your dream a reality. Call us today and start your journey to your next great escape. Your private yacht awaits at moorings.com. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today. If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to countrymd.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GUNDRYMD.com/energy.
What's funny to me, and we don't have to go into this fully, but I just like to call it double standards when I see them. And this is not me expressing my opinion about anything Aaron Rodgers has said, but I would say that a lot of the people who have criticized Aaron Rodgers for being a conspiracy theorist are kind of perpetrating their own conspiracy theories about Rodgers faking his recovery and not being healthy enough to play. it just feels hypocritical to me. It feels like
he's a just coach. Robert Saleh's not the thing. He's doing this with right. Aaron. Like, you sound like him.
You sound like Aaron. Anybody trying to be like, oh, yeah, Aaron Rodgers. Oh, wait, you're saying the Achilles still isn't healed? I thought he was ready to come back in December. Interesting. Weird. You sound exactly like the guy you're trying to criticize. Like,
I'm just asking the question.
Right. And it's so dumb to me. So that, we don't have to get into that fully because everyone's going to have their own opinions about Rodgers and what he says. But I just find that double standard to be particularly funny, amusing, and annoying because I hate misinformation so much. And this is just, there's been a lot of misinformation around Aaron Rodgers this offseason, which I don't know, maybe that's to be expected. But
there's also been a lot of discussion around Hassan Reddick because I thought the Jets were going to get a high end pass rusher, and so far they've gotten nothing because he hasn't shown up.
Sure.
As I understand it, there's really hasn't been like a lot of change from, you know, past Hassan Reddick diatribes on this podcast and elsewhere.
Big words.
As I understand it, it's what seemingly happened is Reddick wants a new deal, and we get that. That's established as fact. The Jets probably said, we're not going to give you a new deal until the end of the season. Maybe in the middle of the season they can discuss it. And then Reddick originally said, okay, fine. And then shows up to the Jets, and I love being here, and Robert Saleh is great, and la, 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 sunshine and rainbows holding hands. And then somebody went back on their word. And if you believe Reddick, the Jets originally said they were going to give him a deal, and now they don't want to give him a deal. And if you're to believe the Jets, you're saying that Reddick agreed not to get a deal. We said we weren't going to give him a deal, and now he wants a deal. So we're probably never going to get an answer. Honestly, it might be a little bit of both because nothing was, you know, in writing. Nothing was actually finalized. So it was all a lot of handshake agreements and yeah, totally. That'll be fine just to get this trade done. But it's still a messy look. Now, eventually Hassan Reddick's going to play for the Jets this year. He's not going to hold out at his age in a contract year and not play. Le'Veon Bell did it. It was stupid. Look what happened to Le'Veon Bell. And he was younger than Hassan Reddick and he played. It's not going to happen.
Correct.
But this is just in the year of cut out the unnecessary distractions and in a year where for the first time, I think even more than last year, I think there's real momentum on the Jets side. Because last year I foolishly just thought their roster 1-53 was better than it was. Now a lot of the holes from last year, which you even admitted they had last year, a lot of them have been plugged up because they got Tyron Smith and they got Mike Williams and Garrett Wilson's a year older. And Breece Hall has proven to be probably a top five running back in the league, unless you're a Madden player, which was ridiculous, but I don't even want to get into that.
Dude.
Like, this is really the only – like, I know there's a Rodgers recovery, but in terms of what I would just call, like, a negative situation, in terms of, you know, contract squabbles or people being disgruntled, I feel like this is really the only thing around the Jets that's holding everything back from being just this perfect Elysium of paradise. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating because – I want to see Hassan Reddick, and he's really good. And I think that there's a pathway to the Jets keeping him for beyond this year. But right now, all that we're getting right now is barbs back and forth, and where is he? I don't know. And guys getting fined. Like, it's really just unnecessarily messy. Like, I don't think this is necessarily an indictment on, like, Joe Douglas or the culture or anything like that. I think this is just standard player, agent, front office squabbling over money that – every team deals with every single year. Find me a team this year that doesn't have some sort of issue with that. I still would just prefer if somebody just mans up and says, all right, you win. Seems like nobody wants to do that.
Dude, I'm still stuck on Elysium of Paradise. That was crazy. That was
one of the three in the Greek afterlife. Elysium is where you go if you're good. Asphodel is where you go if you're like iffy, and then Tartarus is like their version of hell. So
cool.
Big brain time.
Look at that. You picked up an encyclopedia in
encyclopedia. That's a hobby of mine.
If you there know. You go. There
yeah. you go. Not reading encyclopedias, learning about
learning about you're pulling out diatribes. I'm like, dang, you just picked up a dictionary while you're in Alaska. but yeah, no, my stance on the Hassan Reddick thing has not changed. I'm surprised that it hasn't gotten done yet. I did think because whenever you have a situation where both sides are incentivized to do the same thing, I'm always leaning towards that resolution being reached sooner than later. And in this case, I think that both sides are incentivized to get it done as soon as possible, because Hassan Reddick isn't, like you said, Hassan Reddick's not going to hold out, because Hassan Reddick isn't going to get paid unless he plays this year. That's his whole thing. He wants a new contract, understandably so. He's not going to get paid unless he is playing this year. He's also losing money by the day. He loses $50,000 every practice he misses, and those fines are adding up, and they're also unwaivable.
So just imagine being in a position where you could lose $50,000 every single day and be like, I could sustain this.
I mean,
like, just imagine that being in your life.
I don't think he shouldn't want to, and he's losing a lot of money, and the fines are continuing.
The fact that he can financially is like, ah, I wish.
I wish we were good at football, man. I wish we were athletic. I wish we were also 6'3", 250 pounds, whatever.
Hassan Reddick. My dad's 5'8", my mom's 5'2". I had no shot at this.
You were doomed. But yeah, I whenever you have a situation like that, I think both sides are incentivized. Obviously, the Jets are incentivized to get this done as soon as possible, because this is your prized offseason addition. I've seen some people push back on that when I've said that phrase this offseason. This is their biggest addition of the offseason. It's one of the biggest additions that Joe Douglas has made during his time in the Jets. I mean, you could argue, besides Aaron Rodgers, it is the biggest addition, like the most high-profile player that he has brought in. This is a former All-Pro. On paper, should be one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. This is a big deal that he's in the building. And the Jets don't want to have this distraction. Like you said, Mike, they are all in this year. They want to limit the distractions as much as possible. So getting the guy in the building is probably a good start. I don't think, like you said, we'll ever know exactly what happened. I think it was probably a miscommunication issue where the two sides thought they were on the same page, and then they weren't. And then I also think things probably changed when the Jets traded John Franco Myers, because when they traded John Franco Myers, and again, we don't have to harp on that again, because boy, oh boy, I had my gripes with that move at the time, and I still have my gripes, and I think it's still hurting the team now, as we're seeing. But I think when they made that move, Hassan Reddick's agent kind of saw that and was like, maybe we have a little bit more leverage here, because now the Jets just traded away one of their key pieces in their front four. This is a guy who is, you know, playing 60% of snaps last year, whatever he did. That's a pretty significant piece to lose. Maybe we have some more leverage here. Maybe we can get the Jets to give Hassan Reddick a long-term contract. I think that might have been where things kind of changed, because that happened during the draft. That happened a little bit before OTAs and stuff. And if the Jets believed that Reddick was showing up to OTAs, if 3 weeks before that they traded away one of their key players, you know, I could see why there might be a disconnect there, and I could see why maybe Reddick's stance would have changed. But ultimately, my stance is the same. I expect the same solution. I don't expect the Jets to give him a long-term contract. I don't think that would be wise. I don't think that would be a good idea, because for as good as Hassan Reddick is, I don't think he's as good as he thinks he is, or at least as much. I don't think, like, I hate to say that phrase, but I don't think he's as good as what the market would dictate he is. He wants $25+ million a year on like a 4-year contract, at least based on reports. I would never in a million years with this Jets roster construction consider giving Hassan Reddick that deal. I think they will work out some kind of reworked deal, some kind of, you know, band-aid deal, to throw that word out there again. Something where it's giving him guaranteed money this year, possibly keeping him under contract in 2025, adding some incentives to the deal. That still makes the most sense to me. I don't think Hassan Reddick's going to particularly like that, but that is the compromise here. That is the compromise between letting him play out with $0 in guaranteed money left on his deal and no injury protection and no added incentives, and giving him a long-term extension. I think this is the happy medium that the two sides will eventually reach. I don't really understand the holdup, because I think both sides are incentivized to do the same thing. It's probably on Reddick's side, but I think eventually he's going to have to cave, and it's unfortunate for him, but that's the reality of the situation.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Now, he wants $25 million a year, which would make him the he's 30. Yep. That would make him the second highest paid edge rusher, 30 or older, behind TJ Watt.
Yep.
And it would make him the fifth highest paid in the league behind Watt, Brian Burns, Joshua Hines Allen. I guess he got tired of being called Jags Josh Allen, so he finally got rid of that, and Nick Bosa. So that's a lot of money. And if you look at over 30, the only guys that make more than Reddick right now is $15 million a year, which, again, that is not adequate value for how good Hassan Reddick is. He's more than a $15 million a year player. So we'll give him that. The only guys making more than him that are over 30 are Khalil Mack and Von Miller, who's like maybe the worst contract in the league if you consider.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a horrendous deal.
That it is.
And Khalil Mack, even, I know he had like the resurgence last year, but remember for years it was, man, Khalil Mack's taking a little bit of a downturn. And then he got hot again last year, but like, it's not discussed the way running backs are, and it's not normally that bad, but there really aren't that many elite 10 sack every year guys over 30, and the Jets know that. So I get having some ambivalence about that. So ultimately, I think what will happen is I don't think they're going to give him 24, 5 mil a year on anything longer than like a 2-year deal.
Yeah.
Maybe they give him, I don't know, 2 years, 52. That gets him 26 mil a year. He's highly paid. He gets some security. There's some guarantees in there. I know you're not going to get a 4-year contract, but when you're in your 30s, looking for 4-year deals at top of the market value, like if this was Myles Garrett and he had like a Myles Garrett year last year, totally different scenario. Then you consider it, because that's age proof, that production. But Hassan Reddick is probably a top 10 or 12 edge rusher in the league. I don't know if you should give him top 5 money with all those years
I think I'm lower on Reddick than you are, and I think some Jets fans. I don't think he's a top 10 edge rusher in the NFL. I don't think. I think he's a really good player, but I think that some of the, specifically the sack production, I think was a little inflated. I mean, if you look at what he did last year, he had the same amount of pressure, like literally the exact same amount of pressure as Bryce Huff on 400 more snaps. I don't think he is a significantly better player than Bryce Huff. I said that at the time when the Jets made that move. I really don't think there is a massive difference between the two of them in caliber. And then one of them is a lot younger than the other and costs only, I think, $17 million a year. And I don't know. I don't think the Jets are going to give Reddick anything longer than 2 years, like you said, Mike. And I also, honestly, I think the most likely solution is they probably just rework him this year. And I think that would be best for him, because I don't think – like, if he wants to make one more big contract, if he wants to land one more big contract, the best thing for him is to play out this year, hopefully on a rework deal that gives him some incentives, that gives him added security, and then hit free agency. That is if he wants to, and I hate to use the word like better on himself, but like, that's probably the best way that he's going to earn a new big contract. Because if he signs 2 years, now he'll be 32 by the time that he finally hits free agency again. I don't know. I mean, you have the hope that you can produce for 2 more years in a row. Whereas if he goes into this year, produces at a high level once again, and then hits free agency again, he's going to be one of the top guys in the market. And he's going to make a lot of money in an edge market that is continuing to explode. So I think that makes the most sense for him. And I think it makes a lot of sense for the Jets too.
I wonder if there's a way, like, you could almost do it with an option where, like, you know, he plays out this year and he's good, and then depending on last year, you can revisit it. Like, all right, here's this option for $26 million. Are we going to pick it up or not? I feel like that might be one way to do it. But again, I'm not like a contract guru over there who plays with numbers all day. But
right. But
the point there are now. I will say this before we move on to our next topic. Josina Anderson did say that talks are progressing positively. Now, it was a couple days ago and he still hasn't reported, but she is reliable with some of these things. So I don't feel like it's at the point where it was like Le'Veon Bell with the Steelers where just lines are being drawn and it got kind of ugly. I don't think it's at that point yet. I think this really is just, you know, finagling over language of a contract. Now, it looks ugly on the outside, but if you're willing to take the optimistic point of view, it might just be haggling over a couple million here or there. Right. If you want to look at it that way.
I think the most likely outcome is what the Browns did with Amari Cooper, where they gave him a raise in this year and then they guaranteed his contract. That makes the most sense to me. I think that's a good move for Cooper because it allows him to get paid either after the season or even midseason. Now, the Jets said that, or at least that was what was reported, is that the Jets have told and communicated to Hassan Reddick that they're open to a midseason extension. So I think that's where that like option could come into play, where it's like, hey, look, we will rework your deal. We will give you a raise because you're worth more than $15 million, absolutely. And we'll give you some guaranteed money and incentives because you get a certain number of sacks, boom, here are some incentives for you. I think that makes a lot of sense. And then go into the year, and if he starts balling out, you revisit those extension talks midseason and possibly extend him during the season, which is what they did with John Franco Myers a few years ago. I think that makes sense. And
you're worth $25 million or prove it.
Exactly.
You get 10 sacks, prove exactly. It.
Do right now be like, look, you're worth more than $15 million. We understand that. But we want to see what you can do with the Jets. So we're going to say, let's give you these incentives. Let's give you your security, your injury security, and let's give you a pay raise because you deserve it. But if you want the contract you think you deserve, prove it. And I think that makes sense for both sides. We'll see if they do that.
So let's just talk about guys who are at Jets training camp, because first couple days, a little skittish, but always in that way where every time the defense has a great day, like you don't know if it's just the defense balling or the offense being terrible and the other way around. It's kind of hard to decipher these things, but the offense was really struggling the first couple days. A lot of errant snaps from Joe Tippmann, a lot of just receivers not being on the same page with Aaron Rodgers. And then today they were crushing it. And Rodgers threw 6 touchdowns out of, I think, 13 passes, 3 to Garrett Wilson, 2 to Breece Hall, 1 to Malachi Corley. I want to start with, because we're going to go and do a little bit of a potpourri of all these different Jets training camp items. I want to go talk about Tippmann first, because that was the most surprising thing, where he's kind of got like Steve Blass disease. He got Mackey Sasser disease, where he just can't snap the ball. I guess Spencer Long disease is the term for it in the NFL, where you just can't snap the ball. Remember that?
Wasn't he like dealing with a finger injury? Wasn't that what caused it?
Yeah, but then they kept putting him out there. And they're like, the center can't snap the ball. Don't put him in center.
It sucks because that's like Spencer Long gets blamed for that. But it, like, the dude was hurt. Like, he was literally playing with a finger injury. He couldn't snap the ball. Don't play him. Like,
I appreciate the effort, but
shouldn't have been playing.
Rodgers had a pretty good quote on that where he said, I think Tippmann could be an all pro, which that's a huge compliment from a guy who's seen a lot of linemen. And he said, like, because of that, he can take me kind of getting on him about the snaps.
True in the mountains, though.
Yeah. This is not going to be a thing. Tippmann was a center in college, never really had problems like this, played admirably at center last year, didn't really have any snapping issues last year. For whatever reason, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say I graded everybody's snaps and being like, this guy was the best snapper at center in the league. If you do that, you're a psychopath. But this was not an issue last year to the degree of like, oh, it's dominating camp talk. So I think he'll be fine. I just think you got to keep an eye on it.
It didn't dominate talk. But this isn't like a new thing. Like, I think the thing to remember with Joe Tippmann is while he was a center in college, he did play at Wisconsin and they don't really run a ton of shotgun there. So he did not really snap a ton in the shotgun in college. And I remember last summer, this kind of being a talking point. It wasn't a big thing because he wasn't expected to be the starting center and he was even getting work at guard in camp. And that's when he first started playing in the NFL. He was playing a guard before Connor McGovern got hurt. So I don't think it was like a huge talking point for that reason. But he did have some issues.
I just wrote that off, though, as like just rookie camp adjustments.
Yeah, I wrote it off. I don't know if I wrote it off, but I noted it in my mind as, all right, this guy is coming from a system where he did not have to snap a ton at shotgun. It makes sense that he's going to be struggling in his rookie season to do this consistently. And I that was an issue. And there were times during the season last year where his snaps weren't great. I don't think it was like a disaster, but it's not shocking. Like, this hasn't come out of nowhere. Which is why when it's funny when you hear a guy like Nathaniel Hackett be like, yeah, this wasn't an issue at all last year. And I'm like, buddy, you were here. You know it was. Like, you're either lying or you weren't watching your team. Because it was an issue in the summer and even a little bit going into the season. That said, I'm not panicking at this stage. The alarm bells aren't necessarily going off. But it is just a situation where it's like, hey, we got to get this fixed. It's still July. It's July 31st right now. We have over a month before week 1. There is plenty of time to get this sorted out. And by all accounts, today was a better day. I think I saw one or two tweets about a high snap, but nothing crazy. There was nothing like that derailed.
You gotta have high snaps. They happen.
Sure, but nothing that like derailed the offense, which is good. Joe Tippmann has plenty of time to figure this out. And I agree with Roger's assessment because I think it was the last time on this show when we were doing like predictions 2 weeks ago, right before training camp, that I said that Joe Tippmann has the potential to be either the best or the second best offensive lineman in this Jets roster this year. And I do believe that. I 100% believe that. I am a full believer in a Joe Tippmann, I don't want to say breakout year, whatever you want to call it, but like a surgence this year, a leap from him, a second-year leap from Joe Tippmann. I really think it's going to happen. I was very encouraged by what we saw over the latter half of last year. I felt like he really grew into his own as a center. And I think that especially with a lot more security around him, hopefully, with a stable offensive line and a quarterback that is not named Zach Wilson or Tim Boyle or whoever, I think that could do wonders for him. So I'm still very high on his potential and very high on his ceiling. But let's just fix this. You know, I don't like to be talking about center snap issues here in training camp. I'd rather be talking about other things.
You want to talk about Malachi Corley?
Today was a good day for Malachi Corley. Let's talk about Malachi Corley.
Son of Gregory Freeman.
Yes.
For those that don't know, we had a guy on our Facebook chat. If you're on Facebook, feel free to use the chat. They'll show up here, so we welcome that. But we had a guy named Gregory Freeman.
There he is.
On cue. Gregory, we were just bringing you up because we were talking about how for – weeks and weeks and weeks you were on the Malachi Corley to the Jets train, and then there was some dally. I don't know if I load the fit, and then Malachi Corley ends up with the Jets and he's beloved with them. So you called your shot.
You did.
We'll talk about your guy Malachi because first couple days were a little bit inauspicious for him. And again, it's a rookie working in, like, you know, not as many reps as I think I would have liked to see or a lot of other fans would have liked to see. But today may have been the turning point because he got a chance to really cement himself as the wide receiver 3 front runner. And I think he did a pretty good job because Lazard did not practice. I think Robert Saleh called it a general camp soreness.
Yeah. I don't know what that means, but.
So I think that just means like, go away, Allen, for a day. Let's see what the other guy's got.
He's been all right in camp. We can talk about Lazard after this, but
it's like at the end of a baseball season when you have like a good player and a bad team. They're like, your hamstrings hurt, right? You totally have a sore hamstring right now, don't you? We can put you in the DL. It's that sort of thing. But Corley finds the end zone twice, once on an end around, once on a very nice throw from Rodgers. And again, this isn't necessarily indicative of, you know, he's going to be a great technical receiver, but that catch going around the other day.
That was sick.
Bad throw from Rodgers, leaping one hand down the sideline. I mean,
and he got,
if he got in bounds or not, the athletic ability you need to even get a hand on that. Dude, it's insane.
He got both feet in. When I watched it, he got both feet in. It's crazy. He got both feet in.
So this all, I would understand the Jets saying Lazard the wide receiver 3 right now, especially because, you know, Rodgers knows him. You want a veteran in there. Mike Williams might be banged up, so you might want just somebody with some experience. And they're like, I get it. But if it's a tie goes to Corley because – for all the concerns I've had about, like, well, he's not really, you know, he didn't run a full route tree, West Kentucky and all that. Well, the Jets probably don't necessarily have to have him run an Antonio Brown, Larry Fitzgerald level route tree. Just have him do what he's good at. You can do that and still run a very full offense with him in the number 3 because Conklin's going to get catches and Hall's going to get catches. So it's not like he's going to be targeted 9-10 times every game. I think more so than in the past, I think that Corley has a really good shot at wide receiver 3 now that he finally kind of got his sea legs under him and came alive.
Today was definitely the most encouraging day that we've seen from Malachi Corley to this point. I don't want to say that I've been down on him because it's nothing to do with him. I've just been down on how much I think he's going to produce this year, mostly because I think the level to which he will be a part of the Jets offense solely is dependent on how they use him, and I'm not confident at all that they will use him correctly. And that just comes down to my lack of belief in Nathaniel Hackett and the Jets offensive staff. So it's more so about that than it is Corley. Corley, he's a work in progress. I don't know what to expect from him. I know what he's good at, and I know what he can do for this Jets offense. I don't know how much of a complete receiver he's going to be, but today was definitely a big step in the right direction because the reports we've seen, and again, with something with like a wide receiver, I think – that's a position that it generally takes a bit of time, especially early on in the summer, to try and, you know, kind of get your footing, find your footing a little bit. I mean, Garrett Wilson wasn't exactly lighting it up his first summer with the Jets. There was talk early on in training camp where it's like, oh man, is he even going to be like a featured player? And his first game, remember, Garrett Wilson didn't even play. He didn't start his first game. He didn't play 50% of snaps in his first game with the Jets.
I believe that was the Ravens kicking the hell out of the Jets, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think so. It wasn't until that second game where like, hey, get to play this dude. Like he could play. And obviously now he's a phenomenal wide receiver. I'm not saying Malachi Corley is going to be that, but I'm saying that July 31st is way too early for us to say at all what he's going to be. But it is definitely very encouraging that with Xavier Gibson out with that minor injury, it's a leg injury, should keep him out 1 to 2 weeks, I think is what Robert Saleh said. It's very nice to see a guy like Malachi Corley stepping up and maximizing his opportunities, because the last couple of days it was like, oh, Malik Taylor's doing great. And I'm like, all right, 28-year-old Malik Taylor, I'm not exactly counting on him to be the wide receiver three with the Jets. It'd be nice to see Malachi Corley taking advantage of those reps. And today he absolutely did that. I know the Jets ran a lot of red zone drills, which is that's what allowed Rodgers to have.
Gold zone. Austin Powers.
Now, but here's the thing. Gold zone is have you been watching like the Olympics on Peacock? They have like their gold zone thing.
They stole it from Nathaniel Hackett.
They stole it from Hackett.
Button-down mind of Nathaniel Hackett.
he stole it from Nathaniel Hackett. But that's – shout out Peacock. I think they've done a really good job covering Olympics. But anyway, I think that today was a really, really good step in the right direction for Malachi Corley. And you just – not to use coach speak, but you want to see him stack those days. You want to see him stack days like this. And if he continues to play well, there is no reason why he shouldn't be wide receiver three to begin the year, because – I like Xavier Gibson. I think I said this prediction 2 weeks ago that, and I think I might still believe it, that I think that Xavier Gibson is going to be the Jets wide receiver three to start the year and maybe for like a good portion of the year. And I might still believe that, but that opinion can very well change if Corley starts to stack these positive days, because today was a really important step in the right direction for him. And I am higher on, I don't want to say him, because my opinion of him as a prospect hasn't changed. I'm higher on what he can do for the Jets this year because of what happened today.
Now, in that, is that assuming Mike Williams is healthy for week one or not? Because
yeah. Mike, I would be surprised if Mike Williams doesn't play week one. If he doesn't, I mean, look, I'm not going to
say. So Gibson will be over Lazard in that prediction.
Yeah, well, they're going to, like, it's weird because the slot receiver is what I'm calling wide receiver three, and I don't think Garrett Wilson is going to start in the slot. I think they'll rotate him into the slot, but I do think your two outside receivers will be Wilson and Mike Williams, and then Gibson or Corley will be in the slot. I do think it'd be Gibson. Lazard right now, like, you know, I don't know if you want to talk about Lazard, but like going into the summer, I would have said that I think he's going to be a healthy scratch week one. And I still might think that, but it has been nice to see more. I think the Alan Lazard that we've seen this summer has been the Alan Lazard I thought the Jets were getting, which is a guy who has good chemistry with Aaron Rodgers, who is a fine wide receiver three, wide receiver four, who has inconsistent drop issues. Like that's what we've seen this summer. We've seen more positive plays to go along with the negative. Last year was basically just the negative.
Well, and he was also pretty good in camp, though, if I remember correctly, right? Last year,
I don't remember anything about him in camp. Honestly, I don't remember there being any like.
Nobody thought he would play like that.
Yeah, I don't remember any. Well, there wasn't any like major red flags of the guys dropping every single pass, which is kind of what happened in the regular season. But I don't know. I still think there's probably a good chance he's a healthy scratch week one, because you got your top four receivers, assuming everyone is healthy, assuming Williams, Gibson, Corley, Wilson, assuming they're all healthy. That's those four. And then you're probably going to want your fifth receiver that's active to play special teams. And unless Alan Lazard is playing specials, I don't think he's going to be active. That's where a guy like Irv Charles might end up getting the nod over him. But I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
I can't wait for Corley to avenge. He's what I thought our Darius Stewart was going to be.
Well, we'll see.
Darius Stewart like works? That's what he'll be.
Hopefully. I don't want to jump the gun because we haven't seen Corley play. Corley, not to throw this into the universe, Malachi Corley could be our Darius Stewart. We don't know, Mike.
We don't know. Literally because he's a Jets day two wide receiver. That's the only reason.
Yeah, well, he could be I'm forgetting. What was the guy the Packers drafted? Amari Rodgers. He could be Amari Rodgers. Could be Amari Rodgers.
How Shanahan have this guy? It's funny too, before going to our last thing, I remember talking, because you know Noah Eagles doing some of the Olympic stuff, and he's like a prodigy.
Sure, yeah.
Somebody called him the broadcasting Kyle Shanahan, and that he's kind of a nepo baby, but like he's also got the goods.
He's like a good man. Like you could be a nepo baby and still be good at what you do. Like
like the Kyle
Shanahan.
Inside and outside of sports, I just call them Kyle Shanahan. So right. Like, yeah, he obviously got
what's
it.
What's his name from The Boys? Oh my God, you know the main star of The Boys, Dennis Quaid's son.
Jack Quaid.
He's a good one.
The guy who was a U.S. agent in Marvel, Wyatt Russell. Ooh. He's Kurt Russell's son. Like,
there you go.
Other times you get Nathaniel Hackett, whose dad, Paul Hackett, was also a terrible Jets offensive coordinator. Probably is one of the main reasons Herm Edwards got fired.
Sure.
He kept going back to him every year.
Gregory, I got to push back on something Gregory said. Gregory said, don't expect to see Mike Williams till week 8. That is, if that happens, that's a disaster, because the Jets have made it very clear that they fully expect him to be ready for week 1. I believe they said he was ahead of schedule in his recovery. It's the same verbiage they used with Breece Hall last year. If Williams isn't ready for week 1, I'd be surprised. If he's not ready for by week 8, is disaster. Like, this Jets wide receiver room cannot survive Mike Williams not being ready by week 8. Like, I know we talked about that the Jets don't really have a ton of holes. Their wide receiver depth is one of those holes. And if Mike Williams is not ready by week 8, that is a disaster. And we will see the lack of depth in this receiver room.
So we got another. Now, we think Corley could be a good Jets draft pick. One guy who's trending towards a bad pick is Will McDonald.
Yeah.
A pick that it's not looking like a good pick right now, but it's one of those things where scouting him, I just loved him as a prospect. And then I think almost unfortunately for him, he fell into a situation through no fault of his own where it's tough for playing time. It's tough to really get into a rhythm. He's an older guy, but he's still not really like out there yet. Like, it's not his fault he went to the Jets.
Correct.
But things are still not looking good. The big concern that I have is that McDonald showed up for camp the exact same way. And Robert Saleh had a whole diatribe about how he needs to run through people, not just past people. I guess to be optimistic, I guess the thought being, well, but they know he can run past people because he's fast. But if you can't run through people, how effective can you be as like an every down end, I guess, is the way you could spin that. But sure. Here's where I'm concerned about McDonald, because so much of scouting is figuring out the unknown. Now, I find it funny with Corley. I've been joking in that he's one of the most like known quantities you can get for a day two receiver, where you know exactly what he's good at and what he's bad at and his body type and everything. McDonald's a little bit of an unknown because they moved him around so much and he has a weird body type, kind of like a guy who really bloomed late in his college career. So not really a ton out there in terms of mid-first round picks. What the Jets probably thought is, we could probably add 10, 15 pounds. Then he's in the 250s. He's still fast. And then we got a pass rusher. Some guys' bodies, if you're not like a scouting guru or a guy who really like dives into a lot of the verbiage, some guys are what's called maxed out physically. And some guys aren't. Like, if you take two identical pass rushers at 240 pounds, if somebody's maxed out like Will McDonald, it doesn't matter how much weight training you do, how much you eat, how much you do, whatever. Some guys just can't, their bodies can't support extra added weight. Some guys can. Some guys can bulk up. That's what you want, ideally, is guys who aren't maxed out physically, because that way the best years physically are ahead of them. McDonald might be maxed out, and if he is, then he's pretty much just a situational pass rusher, and he really doesn't have any value as a run defender. Now, if he does eventually add the weight, if all the talk about him being stronger is true and he becomes a good run defender, I think there's a path to him being a cornerstone of this defense, possibly a 10 sack guy. Because if anything about McDonald, nobody doubted he could rush the passer and he's good at forcing fumbles and everything like that. Like, nobody, that's what he's good at. The concern is everything else. And if this is what he's going to be physically, I think it'll be harder for him to really carve out a long-term role.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a lot of what I've been saying about the Will McDonald pick since it happened. I was very against the pick when it was made. I know a lot of Jets fans tried to justify it, because that's what happens when you're a fan. You want to justify any pick. But like you said, Mike, it's not his fault necessarily that he was drafted here. It was a bad pick. It was a bad pick. And I feel confident enough saying that right now. Maybe he proves me wrong. Maybe the Jets proved me wrong. But there were so many other players that I think would have made a lot more sense for the Jets at that time. And it had nothing to do with Will McDonald as a prospect. It was just what they were looking for and what they already had in their roster and what they didn't need. And what they didn't need was Will McDonald. And unfortunately, you know, I think I try to give the Jets, specifically Robert Saleh, the benefit of the doubt when it comes to developing defensive linemen. I think his track record speaks for itself with that.
They've been right on pretty much like everybody. So
they've been right a lot. I mean, I haven't loved what their defensive line moves this offseason have been. That'll be the real test, because I've pretty much hated all of the defensive line moves, at least in totality, that they've made this offseason. So if the D-line's the best D-line in the NFL again, then I'm going to shut up and just maybe stop criticizing.
Hey, Kinlaw's showing up looking like using another Greek mythology reference, like Zeus or something. He just jacked.
We'll see.
Did you see Javon Kinlaw's like diet that he's eating now?
Like nine eggs a day
and a pound of ground. But I'm like, how do you do that? I throw up.
I'm pulling for Kinlaw. I know he's got a wild backstory, and you know he's had some injury troubles in the NFL. So I'm very much pulling for him, and I'm obviously pulling for Will McDonald. I want Will McDonald to be, like you said, Mike, a cornerstone of this team. Unfortunately, how I view him, and how I think the Jets view him at this stage. I know that Robert Saleh is talking about we want him to run through people and stuff. I think they just view him as a situational pass rusher. And I think part of them drafted him with the intent that – with the thought of, hey, he's just going to replace Bryce Huff. That was my thought at the time of the pick when they drafted Will McDonald. I was like, well, that's it for Bryce Huff. At the time, I thought that was immediately it for Bryce Huff. But then Bryce Huff took his game to another level. Will McDonald couldn't really get on the field as a rookie. And then the Jets waited until the next offseason to get rid of him. I thought at that point I was like, okay, this is it for Bryce Huff. It was a little off on the timing of it, but it was eventually it for Bryce Huff. Unfortunately, as Gregory is going off in chat and pointing out, Bryce Huff was elite at what he did. Like, elite, elite, elite. He was, I don't think you can make an argument, he was the best situational pass rusher in the NFL because, for my money, he's one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. So the fact that the guy was only playing, I mean, they started using him more a lot in the second half of the season. He was playing 40 to 50% of snaps, if not more, a game. But for most of his career, he was playing 30% of snaps max in games, 25% a lot of the games he was playing for most of his career, and he was still that productive, is pretty ridiculous. And so expecting a guy, anybody, to fill those shoes and fill that role is asking a lot. Expecting Will McDonald to come in and be as productive and as efficient as Bryce Huff was is asking too much. It's just not, I would be stunned if that happened, and that's nothing to do with Will McDonald. It's just how good Bryce Huff was at what he did. But it is definitely concerning, and I want to bring up a nugget that I think there was Connor Hughes dropped it the other day, and it kind of got lost in the shuffle, but I thought it was interesting. He said that there are other, like, he was talking about Will McDonald, and he briefly mentioned in passing that other guys are already starting to work ahead of him. I don't like that at all. That to me was the biggest red flag I think I've seen about any Jets player this offseason. And the Jets are counting on Will McDonald. I don't want to say taking a Jermaine Johnson-like leap because he's not going to play enough to take a Jermaine Johnson-like leap, but they're counting on him taking a bigger leap this year. And if he can't get playing time over Michael Clemens, I'm concerned because Michael Clemens isn't very good. Now, they play different positions. They play different roles. But, you know, the weight is a concern. I don't think I'm the weight isn't like a stopping point to me because, yeah, Will McDonald's like 235, 240. So is Hassan Reddick. Hassan Reddick's like 240. And Hassan Reddick is still a really good pass rusher. They list him at that. The Jets list him at 240 on their website. Will McDonald, I think, listed at 236. So they're like 4 pound difference.
I guess the difference being, though, it seems like they want McDonald to be more like hand in the dirt, play the edge.
That's dumb. And if that's the case, that's dumb.
Well, because that's what they do with Jermaine, and that's just what the scheme asked to do.
If the Jets want Will McDonald to be Jermaine Johnson, they should have never drafted Will McDonald. The only thing that makes sense, the only thing that even justifies the Will McDonald, it doesn't justify it, but at least it makes sense. I see what they're thinking is if they drafted him to replace Bryce Huff. Because he can fill the same archetype that Bryce Huff filled. I don't think he's going to be as good as Bryce Huff, but he can fill that exact same role and do it for cheaper than the $17 million a year that the Eagles are paying Bryce Huff. So that was their thinking. Sure, I understand. I disagree with the thinking, but I understand the thinking. If they drafted Will McDonald thinking that he's going to be a three-down edge rusher who can bulk up to 255, 260 and play the Jermaine Johnson role, that's idiotic. And I don't believe that Robert Saleh would do that because I trust his evaluation defensive lineman too much to think he would do that.
I only think he's doing that because he's harping so much on how big he is, and being more physical and run through people. Like, because of that to me, yeah, that change. Now, I want to get to a comment from Gregory in chat before we move on to our final segment where he says, if McDonald flashes in the preseason, then what?
Great.
Awesome. Fantastic.
That's great stuff.
This is a good team in that where McDonald can benefit is that the Jets are not a team that, like, the Raiders, like, barely take Max Crosby out of the game. They play him, like, 95% of snaps, which is insane.
Yeah. Like, who are you going to play? Malcolm Kuntz? Like, you got nobody.
Robert Saleh had to almost be bullied into letting Quinnen Williams consistently play more than two-thirds of the snaps in a game. And that's Quinnen Williams.
Yeah.
So they are going to – if McDonald's good, they're going to find ways to get him on the field. They're going to rotate their guys come hell or high water. So if McDonald plays, they're going to get him. If Tak McKinley, who's been really good,
yeah,
if he play, they're going to get him in. If you're an edge rusher and you're even okay, they're going to get you in. So yeah, that's where McDonald, I think, if you're him, it's not, it can't be all doom and gloom, because he's like, if I just show anything,
yeah,
they're going to get me some snaps.
Yeah, and I don't want
to be just buried on the depth chart forever.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, because he was generally pretty all right as a rookie. I mean, he barely
when he played, he was okay.
He played, I think, the fewest snaps of any first round pick last year, or at least fewest offensive or defensive snaps of any first round pick last year. I believe it was the fewest snaps of any Jets first round pick since, not to put this in the same category, since Vernon Golston.
Vashawn might break that record this year if Tyron Smith stays healthy.
That's true. You would hope, ideally, if Vashawn does break that record, but not to put Will McDonald in the same category as Vernon Golston, because he's already been more productive than Vernon Golston was.
Statistically, the easiest thing, because he had, what, zero sacks?
He had no sacks, I believe, in his NFL. But
statistically, it's
correct.
You can be as good immediately.
Right. And McDonald, efficiency-wise, again, small sample size, but he was above average in pressure rate. He was above average in I don't know about sack rate, but he was definitely above average in pressure rate amongst all edge rushers. And, you know, the sample size isn't particularly large there, but he was solid as a rookie. Like, I was not discouraged at all by his pass rush production. The only discouraging part was the guy can't get on the field. Like, the guy, they're just not playing him. So,
and it's not his fault. That's the tough part.
If he gets the opportunity, I hope that he succeeds. And I think I'm not like down on him as a player necessarily. I'm just more confirmed. It's just more confirmed my belief that it was the wrong move to pick him, and that justifying letting Bryce off walk because of the Will McDonald pick was another move that they compounded a bad move with another bad move, in my opinion. And I don't think I've seen anything otherwise to point me in a different direction to this point.
Let's keep talking about Bryce Huff, because we want to do a quick little recap of some former Jets who are making a name for themselves, good and bad, across the NFL landscape. We'll start with Huff, because these comments caught my eye. This is Vic Fangio,
yeah,
who is hired to be the defensive coordinator of the Eagles. Now, before we say this, Vic Fangio has literally been a coach in the NFL since the 80s. If you remember the Dome Patrol linebackers with the Saints, that was Vic Fangio's unit. He's been around for 35 years. This is a very old school, very gruff man, I think is a good way to describe him, as gruff. Yeah,
he's not going to hold back.
He's no nonsense. You know where you stand, good or bad, with Vic Fangio. And he was asked, is Bryce Huff – this is crazy. Is Bryce Huff – can he be more than a specialist right now? And he said, does he look like he can do it today? No. But I do eventually – no, just straight up no.
Yeah.
I eventually think he will. Oh, that's good. You pay the guy $17 million a year for 3 years. Eventually, right. I think he can be more than it. Now, to me, that would alarm me if I was an Eagles fan. Because now, we as Jets fans know that Bryce Huff's really good. We know that he's not going to be Jermaine Johnson-level run defender, but, like, he's gotten so much better from where he was, where he can, like, hold his own in that area. If you just paid $51 million for a guy and you're saying, can he play every down? And you said no. Like, that would frighten me. Now, again, I know Vic Fangio is very old school. I mean, look at what happened with the Dolphins, how thrilled they were when he got let go. I mean, they couldn't wait to celebrate when he got let go. So I know he's not the most, like, touchy-feely players coach out there, but that's still a comment that raised some eyebrows for Huff's price tag.
It did, and I definitely, if I was an Eagles fan, I wouldn't love seeing that, because you're admitting that the guy that you just paid a lot of money to is still a work in progress for what you paid him to be, and that's, you know, that's definitely not encouraging. Look, Bryce Huff's not a great run defender. He's never going to be a great run defender. He's not going to be a Jermaine Johnson level run defender. It's just never going to be his game. I think the concerns about him being bad in run defense are overblown because of how just good he is as a pass rusher. I am willing to sacrifice, especially, it depends on the scheme, but if, you know, compare it to if he was still in the Jets, right? I'm willing to sacrifice some run defense from Bryce Huff because you have a guy like Quinnen Williams, because you have a guy like Jermaine Johnson. I mean, you know, if it was last year, you had a guy like, you know, Al Woods. Now you have a guy like Leckie Fotu, Solomon Thomas. Like, you have guys there that can defend the run. I don't think you need every single player in your defensive line to be a above average or even average run defender. If you have a guy like Bryce Huff, who is genuinely one of the best pass rushers in the entire NFL, I think it's okay if he's not a great run defender. And the important thing to me was that when the Jets handed him a larger role last year, because, like, again, we talked about this, he played a part-time role for most of his career. the second half of last year, he was playing a lot of snaps. Like there were games where he was playing 55%+ of snaps. Like that he was playing more than half the game a lot of the time. And his efficiency as a pass rusher did not decline. That was the most telling sign to me. So as far as his stint with the Eagles goes, again, if Vic Fangio is expecting him to be Jermaine Johnson, if he wants him to be even Brandon Graham, like you're not going to get that. You're going to get a guy who is a below average run defender who can be a liability at times in that area, but who is so dynamic and so efficient and productive as a pass rusher that it's okay and that you can absolutely survive. And not only survive, it's a plus, a bonus to your defense to have him out there. And so I'm not particularly concerned. I just would be concerned if that's what the Eagles want him to be, if the Eagles want him to be a three down player, or because I hate to even use the like term three down player because it's so over, like there's so few edge rushers in today's day and age that even play three downs, unless you are, like you said, a Max Crosby or even like a Nick Bosa, you're probably not going to be doing that. And that's okay. But if you're playing 55-60% of snaps and you are getting, you know, 15 sacks a year or 80 pressures, 90 pressures, then that's awesome. I don't care if you're a bad run defender. That's fine. Like, and I think that's how I view Bryce Huff. And I think the Eagles hopefully should view him that same way. I don't know. Fangio's comments were definitely a little alarming, but as long as they know what they're getting with him, I don't think he's going to have any issues there.
And now we got more Jets quarterback talk from some old ghosts of the past, starting with Sam Darnold, the man who can see ghosts.
I was about to say, was that intentional?
I got plans up here. Don't you worry. But Darnold is it. You want to talk about a barn burner of a competition. It is Sam Darnold versus J.J. McCarthy. Catch the fever. So far, Darnold has been the whole way he's been the presumed starter. He's taken most of the first team reps. Early on, there were reports saying he was wowing everybody, you know, making great throws. And it only reaffirms my thoughts that training camp Sam Darnold is a Hall of Fame player.
Yep.
Sam Darnold in shorts and no pads, Hall of Fame player. Then you actually got to go for with the football part of football. Falls on his face. We've seen that in New York. We've seen that in Carolina. He was not, San Francisco, we didn't see him a ton, but he was not an upgrade over Brock Purdy by any stretch of the imagination. No. And now in Minnesota. The only question this year is how long is he going to start? Because, they're going to play McCarthy eventually anyway. So it's just a matter of when do you put him in there. But I will say this, for all the Darnold bros out there, because as you know, they are out there. I don't know how, but they are. Like this.
There's a lot.
It's shocking to me.
I get the Darnold bros more than like Zach Wilson Hive.
Yeah, I get them more. There's more there. But again, it's been, how long has it been? What, 5 years, 6 years?
Yeah.
Four teams, not going to happen. But
yeah,
if he's going to succeed anywhere, Justin Jefferson, offensive coach, scheme he likes, yep, offensive line's pretty good. This is the spot.
Yeah. Jordan Addison, if he cannot.
Jordan Addison, yes.
Stop getting into trouble and stay out of trouble with the law, that'd be great. I think it's a good spot for him. I've seen a lot of people predicting that he's going to be like the Baker Mayfield of this year. And my biggest criticism of that is that we saw Baker play at a pretty decently high level before he had that last good year with Tampa. His rookie year with Cleveland, he was really, really good. Like,
what a playoff game with the Browns, Justin.
And that was as a rookie, right? That was his
third year.
His rookie
that was
year.
COVID year, but he's still with the Browns. He won a playoff game.
And his rookie year was genuinely one of the better rookie seasons that we've seen from a quarterback in recent history.
And started against Sam Darnold on Thursday night.
Right. So, I would pause before saying that he's going to be this year's Baker Mayfield, but it's a good situation for him. I think the reason Darnold ends up thriving so much in the spring is because his biggest issues still as a player are processing. Like, I feel like he's just a step or two slow reading defenses, and it has never fixed itself in the NFL. And you can point to his lack of development in New York as a big reason why, and that's probably a huge reason for it. Unfortunately, when you're stuck in a situation with horrible offensive coaching, no wide receivers, and a terrible offensive line, and you're running for your life, you're probably going to struggle to read defenses because that's not the first thing that's popping in your head. So,
then overconfidence. Sometimes yes, he reads it well, and you're just like, I can make that throw because I'm Sam Darnold, and then he gets picked in double coverage. How many of his picks with the Jets were that?
That's why the term gunslinger was used so frequently with Sam Darnold, because he is a gunslinger, because he has
guns. I got you more a gun sprayer. Like, gunslinger implies like you hit the target a lot, but you're a little like erratic. Like,
sure,
you hit the target.
It was an optimistic term used to describe him, but I I think that he has a chance to be, you know, set up for, I mean, I'm not writing him off yet. After what we saw with Geno Smith having this kind of late career resurgence from him, it would be silly to write off Sam Darnold and say that he can't become an NFL starter at some stage, because it's possible. But obviously we have to remember the guy like Geno Smith is an anomaly, and he's an exception to the rule. He's not the rule. Sam Darnold, like you said, this is his fourth team. We've seen kind of what he is at this stage. We've seen him outside of New York. We saw him last year in a good situation in San Francisco, and admittedly, he didn't play very much, but he wasn't exactly Patrick Mahomes when he was given the opportunity to fill in for Brock Purdy. So I don't expect him to be anything great this year, but it is nice to see him doing well in the summer. I do root for the guy. I'm happy to see him still in the NFL, and I think it's a very different situation than the guy we're about to talk about in a second, because, well, I think Darnold should have a lengthy career in the NFL, and you know, whether it's as a backup.
He can be a backup till he's 40 if he wants to.
Absolutely. Whether it's as a backup, fringe starter, or maybe even down the line as a starter. Who knows? The guy we're about to talk about, I think this is it, Mike. I think he's
on his own. Where are you at, bro? It's really quiet. I can't hear you. You guys were so loud last year. Where are you at, man?
I think this is unfortunately probably the end of the road for Zach Wilson.
Oh, no. But Justin, don't you read Twitter? Look how many accounts from Utah love him.
Dude,
that could possibly be the end.
Somebody added me on Twitter today, like my personal account on Twitter, saying like some shit about the Jets, some negative thing. And I clicked on him and I saw he's a BYU fan. And I'm like, this is still happening?
How?
It's July 31st, 2024. Why are we still doing this? Like, it's crazy.
College, again, I've said before about how I hate college football fans, especially ones in the like where there's not a lot of professional teams. So like they're the team. I went to history class there, and now because that 18-year-old kid struggled, I'm going to go curse him and yell at his family. That's creepy.
It's wild, dude. But yeah, Zach.
And anyway, now that we've upset everybody, Zach Wilson, he is in a battle.
Right.
For the quarterback one job in Denver between Bo Nix, who again, like McCarthy, will eventually start, Jarrett Stidham, who is Jarrett Stidham, got picked off by Jamal Adams with the Jets. I believe that was like one of what two he had with the Jets.
It's
Jamal Adams.
Maybe. I forgot. I remember
that a lot. And that was one of them. That was the Patriots were up. Like, I think it was the Luke Falk game where they were up like 34-0. And then he threw a pick and then he had to put Brady back in.
That sounds right.
I remember that game.
Yeah.
And then Zach Wilson in Denver. And originally they were kind of splitting up reps, not in like a hierarchy way, just in like a let's get everybody some reps way. And people took that as, oh, Zach Wilson could win the job in Denver. Well, he just had his turn skipped in the quarterback rotation. So no reps for Zachy Poo. Sean Payton did say that he has, quote, got a plan, which I think the plan is cutting him. I think that's the plan for Zach Wilson.
But, dude, I saw Broncos fans being like, do we think we could trade? I saw one Broncos fan. They responded to Ben Albright, who was basically saying that Zach was like a distant third in the quarterback. It was like Stidham, Bo Nix, big
not
guy,
even in Zach the Wilson. Plane of reality. Zach Wilson. Was
like, you think we could trade him for a fourth? And I'm like, you just got
him for what, like a sixth?
Yeah, for a swap of a sixth and a seventh. And you're like, maybe we could flip him for a fourth after a terrible summer in the worst quarterback competition in the NFL.
If you're a GM and you trade a fourth for Zach Wilson, you should shoot yourself in the foot.
You could have said worse. Foot is being kind.
Yeah, I'm not going to like advocate for anything worse. Yeah, just enough so that you're in a lot of pain, because that was a stupid move.
You're already metaphorically shooting yourself in the foot by doing that. So
exactly. So do it for real if you have some cojones on you.
Right. But yeah, it's definitely speaks volumes that Zach Wilson.
Wow, I got aggressive.
Look
what Zach Wilson does to you with three years. Escape this fate, Denver. Don't buy into it.
Once we hit an hour on this podcast, shit gets weird. That happens every single time. But yeah, I think it speaks volumes that Zach Wilson is a distant third, like well behind in the easily the worst quarterback room in the NFL. Like, I don't think you can make a case that there's a single quarterback room in the NFL that is worse than the one that is likely to start Jarrett Stidham week one. And then has Bo Nix, a guy who sure was what, the 12th overall pick this year, a guy who a lot of people probably had as like a second round, third round grade, was seen as maybe a fringe first rounder who went 12th overall. So yeah, I think it speaks volumes that Wilson is third in that quarterback competition. They might keep him around as like a camp arm or as a practice squad arm.
Maybe. He still has eligibility for practice squad, right?
Right, of course. And maybe he sneaks his way onto the active roster just because, you know, they want to use that third quarterback rule. Possibly, I don't know. But I think this might be the end of the road for him.
This is the last house on the block.
Yeah, I put out a tweet where it's, you know, it's one of my, I think it's probably my favorite sports meme, which is the get ready to learn Chinese buddy. But it was get ready to learn Canadian buddy. And I think that is going to be Zach Wilson's path if he wants to continue his football career past this season. Might have to go to the CFL, might have to go to the UFL. Hell, hit up Quantez Stiggers, go to the Fan-Controlled Football League, wherever you got to go, buddy.
Is that even still around?
Yeah, I think so. I subscribe to them. I follow them on Twitch. So, yes, they are. And they stream every once in a while still. So, yes, it is still around.
Wow.
I have not watched a stream of theirs in a long time, but I know they still exist.
Yeah, I wonder why.
I should have been watching when Quantez Stiggers was there, man. That would have been really cool. But yeah, I don't know. It's not going to be the NFL for Zach Wilson. And barring an insane turnaround, I think people have realized like the guy can't play at the NFL level. And I think we should have known that. I mean, a lot of us did know that after what we saw with him with the Jets. This wasn't a situation where it's like, oh man, he's just playing poorly. It's like, no, this guy is not an NFL caliber quarterback, much like Tim Boyle was not. If we could say that about Tim Boyle, who I believe is still on the Houston Texans roster right now, I don't get it. But you know, if we could say that about Tim Boyle, we could say it about Zach Wilson. And you know, unfortunately, it's the end of the road for Zach. I don't think he's getting another opportunity after this one.
We're going through what I call the former Jets quarterback waltz, or the salsa or bachata or whatever dance you prefer. where how many times in just the last 10 years has there been a young quarterback that the Jets have had? Mark Sanchez to the Eagles, Bryce Petty to the Dolphins. Yep. Sam Darnold to the Panthers, Zach Wilson to the Broncos. Like you could name, the list goes on and on. And then they start playing poorly, and it's, well, if we get a better offensive line and we get a new offensive coordinator and we just need to take advantage of his arm. It's the same things that they said about all these guys, and none of them can play.
Yep.
And now Wilson's the next one for it. Like the fans in Denver right now, I know it's not this bad because he's probably not going to play in a game, but – they sound like Darnold in Carolina. They sound like Bryce Petty in Miami. Like, even to a degree, Mark Sanchez in Philly, though he actually was okay, if I remember correctly, in Philly. Like,
he had a couple of good games.
You know, Chip Kelly helped him out, but like,
yeah.
It's the exact same beat for beat. Everything.
Right. Well, the good news.
And they're like, well, we'll be different. Well, why?
The good news is Broncos fans have another young quarterback that they can irrationally defend regardless of whether he struggles, and that's Bo Nix. So I hope that they won't do that with Zach Wilson. I hope they realize like, yeah, this guy's just bad. And this is just who he is. This is who Zach Wilson is at this stage. This is kind of who he has been in the NFL since he was drafted by the Jets. But they have Bo Nix. They'll irrationally defend him because, you know, that is what fans do. They will irrationally defend young quarterbacks, and we've been guilty of that as well. They will irrationally defend young quarterbacks until it is too late. Until that young quarterback is not in uniform anymore, they will continue to irrationally defend
them. And even still, they'll defend them.
Well, if you were a fan of them in college, then yes, you will continue to defend them regardless of where they are in the NFL.
So thank you guys for tuning in to this episode of the Jet Press Podcast. It feels good to be back. I'll refresh our vacations. Make sure you tune in because now stuff's really going to ramp up pretty soon. But before all that, you can follow us on Apple, Google, Spotify, all those podcast platforms. We're on all of them. And we're on YouTube at the Jet Press. You could like the stream. You could subscribe. Do all that good stuff over there. So, Justin, feel free to sign us off.
It definitely feels good to be back, dude. It's crazy. We're like, what, 5 weeks away, something from the regular season? Like, we're 5-6 weeks. We're getting really close. Like, we got like 5 or 6 more shows, and then it'll be week one. As a reminder, during the season, we do tend to do streams live after games. So we usually stream 2 times a week. We'll probably talk more about that as we get closer to the season. Also, terrible time mentions now, but we are no longer streaming on Twitter. So make sure you are watching.
Thank you, Elon.
Thank you, Elon, for making us pay to do that now. Absolutely not. So check us out on YouTube,
Facebook. Giving you my money.
Right. All that stuff. But thank you all for joining us on the show today. You can follow Mike on Twitter at @ByMikeLuciano. Follow me on Twitter at @JustinT4U. Follow Jet Press at the Jet Press. Even though you can no longer see our streams there, you can still follow our tweets and see whatever content we're posting there. Download the Jet Press podcast wherever you get podcasts. Check us out on YouTube and TikTok for as long as that's still around. Subscribe, like, hit that notification bell. You guys know what to do. We stream live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern time. Hopefully no more breaks over the next few weeks. We are back and hopefully back for good. Thank you all for listening to Jet Press podcast. I've been Justin Freed. That has been Mike Luciano. We'll see you guys next week.
See you folks next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.